Welcome to Community Creations, the podcast where we dive deep into the inner workings of the soul of communities, exploring the heartwarming and inspiring people, stories, and groups that have shaped a community into what they are. I'm your host, Madeline Cha, and I'm thrilled to embark on another exciting episode with you.
Hello, my name is Madeline Cha, and I'm the host of the podcast Community Creations, where we interview community leaders. Could you give a quick introduction of yourself?
Of course. Hi, Madeline. My name's Laura Vosepka, and I'm currently serving as the executive director at Creative 360, which is an arts and wellness nonprofit in Midland.
That's amazing. And I'm so curious. I'd like to start off with, what are some of the proudest things that you've done as an executive director?
Oh, wow. That's going to take a long time. No. Creative 360 is such a great place to work at because it's an amazing team. We're really small, but we get a lot of big things done. And I think maybe one of the things I'm most proud of as the director is being able to get us to the point where we were stable enough, both financially and programmatically, to be able to move into our new space out on Jefferson from our old space on Bayless.
How was that transition going from your old location at Bayless to Jefferson?
Well, we did it pretty quickly. During the summer, we don't have as many performances because people are busy being outside. And so we thought, well, we've got to get it done in the summer. And so we made a goal for ourselves that we would move out at the end of July and be ready to go by Labor Day. And again, there's really only 6 total people working at the space. So it was a pretty lofty goal, but we got it done. And, you know, I think it's always a work in progress. Silly things like no one can remember where people put the vacuum or something silly like that, right? But the big stuff is working really, really well.
How do you work with such a small group of people? Like 6 people, that's really a lot to do as a small group moving from one location to the other.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've worked in huge organizations, and I've worked in, this is probably the tiniest organization I've worked in. And there's something about, I think, being a small group where you almost learn to read each other's minds, and you realize what needs to be done, and you know when to jump in and help each other. And we have a pretty good sense of what our limits are. I think we a lot of times bite off more than we can chew, but that's okay. And we just really, I mean, I'm speaking for them, I suppose, but I think we really just like spending time together, and that makes it easier for sure.
So you mentioned that there were some cases where you bit off more than you can chew. So are there any cases? I'm just so curious because I also work with a small group of members at our school's German club. And so working together in a tight-knit group, as you said, it has its benefits. But definitely when you have big projects or you have big events that you're planning, it's really difficult.
Yeah, it can be all hands on deck, right? Our staff is, there's me, and then our program director is Colleen Reed. She's also the curator of all of the exhibits that we have. And then Laura Brigham she's an amazing actress and director. So any kind of performances we do, she's doing, but she's also our publicity director. And then Christy, who's our office manager, kind of takes care of every important thing. She's got to be the one who's always kind of looking to see who needs more help. And then we have a maintenance person named Dan, who's only part-time. And then we have 2 other part-time office helpers. And so the thing is, like, if someone gets sick, you know, let's say the maintenance guy gets sick and the air conditioning's not working, well, someone else has to fix it, right? And so I think we get really used to jumping in and sometimes having to tackle things we're not that good at, but we figure out how to get it done. And I think we can do it with a smile. This past week has just been so busy. We had 2 sold out performances, and that's been amazing, but it's been in a new space. And, you know, silly things like, oh my gosh, how are we going to get this light to work? Or where are we going to put this table? Or, oh my gosh, we don't have enough tablecloths. We kind of forgot about that, right? So yeah. It's always things like that, but we get through them. We get through them. And we always have, I think what we have to remember is we're lucky. We have the chance to make an impact on our community. But honestly, Madeline, you know, nothing we're doing is life or death. And so when we run into little bumps in the road, we just kind of have to keep them in stride and just go along with it.
I play an instrument too, and we definitely perform all the time, like as an orchestra at school, at the Daohai Symphony Orchestra. And I've also been involved in orchestras outside of Midland too. And I totally know about the it's not a life or death situation. And I'm curious, how do you guys control that and bring people to these community events that you guys want to like have an impact on the community? How do you do that?
Yeah, so, you know, it was interesting when we had our performances this weekend, I had a chance to really welcome everyone to the new space. It was the first big performance event we had in the new space. And I reminded everyone there, and I honestly, we all honestly believe this, that we as an arts organization are there to bring our community what they're looking for. And that's not true of every arts organization, and it shouldn't be, right? Some arts organizations are out there finding the things that they believe their community need to see. And so they're, and we do some of that, but a lot of what we're doing is listening to folks. You know, what will make you happy? What do you want to learn? What do you want to see? What, you know, what makes your life feel happier, better, more creative? Share that with us, because that's the thing we want to do. We want to always be a safe space, a supportive space, a place where when people leave, they're happy. And that's always our goal. And so I think people respond to that, and they appreciate that. That we listen to them and that we'll make those things happen as best we can.
Yeah. And recently, because I went to Houston once and I saw this walk-in room artwork, and it was by an artist where they took a bunch of lanterns. They were light lanterns, and it was a whole mirrored room full of lanterns. And I just find that this is becoming a big like trend for artists these days. And when I stopped by one of the Creative 360 exhibitions, there was also a walk-in room exhibition. And so I'm curious, what is like some of the wildest artwork that you've curated?
Well, we've done some great stuff, but we have even better stuff coming up. So that kind of immersive experience is becoming really popular, where it's not as stuffy as, say, going to a museum where you're just standing in front of a painting. There's this hope that you can get people to have certain feelings and to maybe really see what the artist was feeling and really immerse yourself in the process. And you're right, we have the downtown room where you can do that. But we have two other things we're working on right now that I think are going to be amazing. And the first is, we actually own a house out on M20 on the way to Mount Pleasant called the John Pratt Mosaic House. And it's a house that's, the outside of it is literally covered, all of the walls with mosaics that this man, John Pratt, did when he was healing from a mental illness. They're absolutely beautiful. And the house is in disrepair, and we knew we were going to lose it, have to have it demolished. So we had five artists who went out to the house and scraped all of those pieces off of the house and then redid all of the mosaics on 6-foot boards that we can now put into a room in our space where you'll be able to walk in. And it's so amazing because the way the light shines, it's all mirrors and ceramic, and the light shines, and it's kind of an amazing experience that's going to feel even more immersive once we have it kind of surrounding folks instead of having to walk around this house. And we're really excited about thinking about the music we can have in there and the story that we can tell about how important art was for this particular man to really deal with some pretty huge mental struggles, huge. So we're excited about that. But we also have, we are hoping to have the opportunity to put an installation in that's called The Woven Forest. And people who have had a long history with Creative 360 will remember it because it was in our Bayless building once a long time ago. And it's literally a forest of woven trees that a woman made on a loom that are floor to ceiling that you can just walk through. They're just absolutely amazing. And we had a couple of them up downtown when we first opened, but we're hoping to get many, many more, and we will probably put that installation in downtown. But Madeline, we were just talking today about some really good ideas we have for downtown that will be immersive experiences like that, that I'm not going to say anything because they're surprises, but they should be really, really fun.
I'm so excited to see all of these exhibitions. And yeah, I'm it's so amazing. Like these immersive in-room experiences, I find they just absorb my whole mental being when I walk into the room. And especially because you can close the door on the person when they walk in, like all the light is gone and mm-hmm. it's just the artwork. And so it's so cool. Yeah. How does you and your team kind of sit together and brainstorm these kinds of ideas?
It's, you know, when I said earlier that this has just been, it's been such a wonderful group to work with, it's probably the most fun job I've ever had. And I've had some amazing jobs. Because we meet, we have a formal meeting every Monday, but it's really more to just plan who's going to get certain things done. But it's almost every day or every other day, someone will come in and say they have an idea. I've got an idea. And we'll come together in a room and we just start thinking it through. Like, well, could we do it here? How much will that cost? Do we have enough people? Where would we get this? And if it starts to get some legs, then we'll keep pushing it forward. And it's such a team effort that I'm not kidding you. There are times where people will come up to me and say, well, how did you think of this? Or who thought of this? And I'll say, I actually didn't think of this, or I don't remember. None of us remember who thought of this, because usually it's just that someone throws out a little seed, and by the time we get to the actual thing, it's morphed and changed and really become a very creative 360 version of whatever that little kernel was. Everyone's fingers are in it, and it's definitely a group process. And we all bring such diverse talents to the table that we can all kind of count on each other to ask the right questions, right? To ask those challenging questions. Well, how are you going to handle this? Or what are we going to do about this? Or how will this happen? And I think that's the key to it for sure.
What would you say are the core values that the whole team, including yourself, view in artwork or projects or events that you're planning?
I think that's a great question. So Creative 360 as an organization actually has four core values. And I do, it's not just something that I say. I really do think they're at the heart of everything. And the questions we ask always revolve around those. And they are, and I think it's really important to note that the first one is inclusivity. And the second one is creativity. And the third one is respect. And the fourth is community. And so as we're planning something, the first question we're always asking is this going to be inclusive? Is everyone who wants to be able to do this going to be able to do this? And how will we make it be that way? Will people feel safe coming to this? Are we really welcoming everyone? And that is, it really is the basis of everything we're doing, is we want there to be no barriers to people being able to participate in the creative opportunities that we lend to them. The creativity part, you know, we really define that in a lot of ways. And it's really important to us as an organization that we are not trying to compete with all the other wonderful arts and wellness organizations we have in Midland. We're so lucky in Midland to have such amazing groups that are doing art and dance and movement and music and sound and, right, you name it. And we know there's always going to be overlap, but we're very careful to know what's happening at the Center for the Arts, what's happening at Ways to Wellness, what's happening, right, at a lot of our different partner groups, so that we can not only not schedule over them or steal, right, their clients, but that we can support them, right, and help get people towards those opportunities that are already in the community. So a lot of times our thinking is really about, all right, what are we missing in this community, right? What gap can we fill? Sometimes it's simple, like there's so much great theater in this community, but there's not very much for the real young kids, like 5, 6 years old. Well, we started a program this fall, and Kara Baker's doing Trunk Theater, and it's an introduction to theater for real young kids, because that was missing. And we thought, well, we can fill that gap. So we're gap fillers a lot of the time.
Gap filling.
Yeah.
So then do you kind of collaborate with other organizations to fill these different gaps and to create an even more blooming project.
Absolutely. I think you'll see a lot of times there'll be an event happening at Creative 360, and it's not even, quote, our event. We're just hosting it, and we'll be participating. Maybe we're running the arts project there. Maybe we're painting faces. Maybe we're, giving the music, offering the music. But another group has the kind of plan. We just did that this weekend. We had the Celebration of Peace at Creative 360 on Saturday, and it was run by Nonviolent Peace Force, but we were the home for it because we believe in what they believe in as well. And we do that a lot, where we'll offer our time, talent, resources, spaces to other groups who have an overlap in their values and their mission like we do. And then we also were part of Public Arts Midland, and so we're helping the public arts projects this summer. Public Arts Midland received a grant to do the painted benches that are around town. And that project started right before we moved into the new building. So we said, well, we shouldn't just have the new building be the art studio for this. So we covered all the floor in plastic and put all the benches in the new building so all the artists could be together, meeting each other, painting together, helping each other. That's the kind of thing we love to do.
And the utility boxes in downtown, was Creative 360 also a part of that?
Yeah, so we're, as a part of Public Arts Midland, Public Arts Midland will have a theme every year, and Creative 360 always participates. We actually did the box that's by the bridge, by the Loon Stadium. That's the Starry Tridge. It looks like a Van Gogh version of the Tridge. That was designed by one of our art teachers. Her name's Elise Noble. She's very talented. And she put it on the box, and we all helped to paint it. So we all take credit for it, even though she's totally the one that came up with it. But it was really fun for us to be able to do it together. So we participated in the piano project. We did the community mural project. We're really always really excited to work with Public Arts Midland, for sure.
How did you get into this job? Like, how did you form an interest in this area?
So that's a funny question and probably a whole nother story. But I went to college to be a writer, and it turned out I majored in English and chemistry, and I went to grad school. So my PhD is in chemistry. I'm a scientist, and I was a chemistry professor forever. I did a little bit of work at Dow for a while, but I found out I really liked working with students. So I went back to teaching, and I worked my way up into the administration, and I moved right before 2020. I moved out to Montana to be a college president. And Montana was beautiful. I loved the city, but it really wasn't what I was looking for. I just missed being with people that were, getting things done and doing things. And it felt like I was a long way away from where the actual cool stuff was happening, right? So I just wasn't sure what to do. And it was, sometimes the universe just speaks to you, right? I came home at Christmas to be with my son and my husband, and I read in the newspaper that the current executive director was retiring and that they were going to be looking for a new executive director. And I loved this place, right? I came to this place to paint. I love art. And I was like, wow, would that not be the most fun job? And I just kept thinking about it and thinking, why would I not apply for that job? Because running a college isn't all that different than running a nonprofit, a small nonprofit. In fact, sometimes it's easier because you have more people working for you that are actually doing the, you have accountants and all that stuff. But yeah, and it really has, it was one of the best decisions I've ever made. I moved back. I met the whole team. They're amazing. Good decision. And it means it's never too late to really just change your direction, right? To go from being a chemist and a college person to running a nonprofit arts and wellness center. It's a big change, but that's fun.
In this big change, then, do you feel that, like, that kind of chemistry background or any of your hobbies have influenced how you view art?
That's a really good question. And I'm not sure, it has to be true. That has to be true, because I think that's true for all of us. Everything that happens to us, all of the things we learn, the way we learn how to learn, we can't help but have that influence the way we interact with the world. It has to be true. I think that those things just cause you to sometimes ask different questions or see things in different ways. And I am a true believer that when we come to the table and bring diversity in all of its forms, whether it be race or background or gender or religion or age or ways of thinking, how you're trained, all of those things cause us to have people around the table who will ask different kinds of questions about different kinds of things. And that's when we can get to the realization where we'll design something that will serve more people because we have more voices at the table. So I think that being a scientist, I mean, my team would sometimes probably rolls their eyes, at least in their heads, when I ask some kind of question that's about data, right? Because I'm a big data collector. Well, we don't have any data about that. We need data for that. And they probably think, oh, brother. But sometimes you do, right? But I'll also be the person who will say, you know, I know this isn't something we can measure. This has to be something we just feel good about in our gut, and we just need to move forward with it. So I think all of us should embrace the ways we think and the ways we know things and be proud of those and bring those to the table and not be afraid to share why it is you think or believe what you do, because people need to know that and understand it and be able to add to it. So
yeah, because I have a musical background and I have so many interests, that's the thing. And so it gets so complicated. Like wherever I go, I form like the weirdest questions, or I start forming the most like interesting interests in everything. And so yeah, I ask the most spontaneous questions. And so I really wanted to ask you this question.
So it is funny that you say that. I was always like that in college because I was reading, but then I was doing science. And here's some amazing things that I kind of dug into. So you probably learned in school the colors of the rainbow as Roy G. Biv, right? And I always wondered why there are seven, right? Because you've got red, orange, and yellow. They're all different. And then you have blue, green, and then you have blue. And then you have indigo, which is blue. And then you have violet. And I was like, well, why do you have to have all of those? And I looked into it and I looked at wavelengths. And do you want to know why it is? It's because Newton was the one who did that research and the colors. And he was a musician. And he wanted seven because of octaves. He wanted seven. So now when we teach it, we've actually moved away from that. It makes me so sad because most people that teach it now have dumped the indigo. But he put it there for a reason, right? Because he was a musician. I think that's so cool. Like, how amazing is that? That the way we think about something came from someone who was mathematically connecting, right? All of these different things, the mathematics of music, the mathematics of light, the mathematics of physics. Like, that's so cool. It really is so cool.
Yeah, that is so cool. And when I talk at home, like with my dad and then my mom and stuff, we just once talked about philosophers in the past and how they had such a diverse education. And so that brought a lot of different colors to the table, just as you say, how music influenced his view of the different colors, even though it's science. And you use Roy G. Biv in all sorts of areas, such as chemistry, about like wave particles and all of that. I'm currently learning about that actually in chemistry. And all of the other stuff, I think that's super important. And so this amazing experience you have to be able to lead this arts organization, I feel like that is a huge like opportunity to expand your perspective. Although you studied chemistry for such a long time, I find that super impressive that you also had the bravery to like, you know, step into a completely new area because you used to do teaching and stuff. But yeah, when you were teaching, did that kind of transfer to this role like really well? Because you have to stand in front of people. I find that really amazing, like how teachers can do that all day and they can formulate all the ideas in their head and then deliver all of this to students so that they can develop an understanding. Yeah.
Yeah, I think my guess is if you think back to the teachers who were the most important to you, and sometimes it's not necessarily the ones you liked the most, but the ones that when you look back and you think about how much you learned from them, one of the things I think is almost always in common with those people is that kind of actively engaging with you during the process, and they're the ones that maybe stopped when they kind of realized that the class wasn't getting it, or took the time to, or never said to you something like, well, I don't understand why you don't understand that, who sat down and said, well, let's unpack that and figure out what's not clear. And so that whole idea of being able to interact with someone and watch them, listen to them, hear what they're saying, but also read what they're thinking, and trying to figure out what the most important thing is, I think it's important in a lot of jobs, but certainly the current job I have now as well, right? Trying to figure out how can someone safely ask a question? What is it that people really need to feel like they can learn something new, whether it's painting in watercolors or figuring out how to do a physics problem, right? I do think that's true with a lot of jobs, though, that if you really think about the things in your job that you love or that you're good at, they translate into so many other potential job opportunities or careers. And they bring diversity to that career then, right? A different way of thinking or of coming to what you know to be true. And just open-mindedness. I think there's an open-mindedness associated with that. The other thing that I think is important is I think that as people, especially nowadays, everything's so hectic and expectations are high. And I think it's really hard to be a student nowadays because you have so much technology around you, and so we've just expected you to be able to do 10 times more than we ever could do when we were in school. But just to be able to kind of own the fact that there are limits to it, that you have to take some time to yourself, that it's okay for you to stop and make a change or make a turn or say, hey, you know what? I'm going to jump in and be new and the worst at it for a while. Like, I don't have to continually just be working to be the best at something. It's okay for me to, even at 61 years old, say, I'm just going to try something new and start right at the bottom again and see how that goes. So
that's really amazing. I just have a really final question for this interview that I asked to all of the different people I've interviewed. So what are the top three pieces of advice that you would give to, especially like young people who are trying to get involved in their community as a leader?
That's a great question. I think you should be observant. I think that you should think about what you know you bring to the world that's particularly uniquely you, that makes you special and that brings something to the world that nobody else can do in that way. And you should think about who needs that. I think sometimes with young people, we give you definitions about what it means to be a leader. And we say, well, you know, you should be president of the Key Club, or you should, right, do this in your church, or you should, and that's, you can make a list of things on your college application. And my advice would be, look at your authentic self, think of the things that make you the happiest, because you know you're making a difference when you do them, and find a way to offer those things to your community in a way that changes your community. And then you'll be a leader, because people will look up to you because you'll be living the thing you believe in. And that's what leaders do, right? Leaders live the thing they believe in. And the other piece of advice I would give, which is a little bit of a tangent, is that you have to sell yourself big. You have to realize that whatever that thing is you're good at, it's important. It really is important. And you may not have figured out yet how you can carry it out to the world and make the world a better place, but you will. And don't let other people tell you what's important and what's not important, because you always kind of just know in your heart that that's an important thing. And don't be afraid to change your mind. Right? Because yeah. I've done it a million times. So
that's such amazing advice. It makes me feel unique and special. Yeah,
you should. You should, because we all are, and we have to. And I'm not. And you know, you could make that sound a little silly and like Barney, something. But it's true. We all are bringing this collection of amazing things to this world, and the world needs what we have. There's a quote that I have at the bottom of my emails that says, I can't do all the good. I can't do all the good the world needs, but the world needs all of the good that I can do. And anything you do is not too small. It's not. If it's your authentic self and you're bringing it in a true way to make the world a better place, it matters. It matters. And that's what builds people into being a leader.
That is an impactful quote. And I really love how you emphasize the idea of uniqueness in everything. And authenticity is a huge topic these days too, because it's hard to be authentic in a world where everything is kind of standardized. Yeah. And things are changing so rapidly, like COVID just suddenly happened. And then people all are afraid of certain like possibilities and situations. And we all, I feel like, run towards the same thing in many situations. So that is really amazing advice. Thank you so much for this interview.
It's been my pleasure.